This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 64, for the week of Monday, June 1st, 2009. More on PowerShell. This week's interview, we bring back Steve Murawski, a PowerShell community champion. Steve was on the show a couple of months ago and gave us a good introduction to PowerShell. Now we're going to talk about some more in-depth topics with him. Let's listen to the interview. Hi, this is Larry, and I'm having a sense of deja vu because I'm sitting at a local bookstore, little local coffee shop inside of a local bookstore, and I'm sitting here with Steve Murawski. Steve, can you say hi to the audience?
Hey, Larry. How you doing? And hey, everybody.
We talked about 3 months ago about PowerShell, right?
Actually back in March. Yeah, it was back in March.
And it's June, so yeah, depending on how you count it. So it's been about 3 months, right? Yeah. I love the show that we recorded, but I felt that in 30 minutes we barely kind of scratched the surface.
Oh, we barely scratched the surface.
Yeah, I mean, we hit some block and tackle stuff, got, I think, a lot of people interested in PowerShell. But I think even I read your blog when you wrote up about the show, told everybody, hey, you know, go check out, I was on The Thirsty Developer. I think you even mentioned, like, oh, this is, like, the five things I forgot to mention.
Yeah.
and 30 minutes goes fast, you know, as a podcaster. Because that's one of the things, you know, just to bring everybody up to speed on Steve, you do the Mind of Root podcast every Wednesday.
Yes, we do. We're at themindofroot.com, and we broadcast live every Wednesday on Ustream at 8 p.m. Central, so if you're interested, check us out.
And you passed the century mark on shows, right?
That we did. Back 2 weeks ago now, we passed the 100 mark. We'll still be going strong, so hopefully we'll be around for another 100.
Yeah, Thirsty Developer's in the mid-60s now, so we're I don't think we're gaining on you, especially if we both publish every week. But,
right.
it would be impossible, right? But we barely scratched the surface, and you know, you said there were some specific things that you didn't cover. And last week, I had somebody, a good buddy of mine, come up to me. And this is not somebody who brings up every show to me. This is somebody who out of the blue said, hey, I was catching up on Thirsty Developers, and I really liked that PowerShell conversation. Can you give us more PowerShell?
Oh, I can give you as much PowerShell as you can take.
Well, and we live fairly close to each other, so it's really easy to do this. So, you know, we're definitely going to talk a little bit more about PowerShell today. But also, if we don't, you know, yet cover the topic completely, maybe we'll have you back in a couple more months and talk about it some more.
Oh, sounds good. I'm always willing to talk about PowerShell.
A couple things we were talking about before we started recording is that a scripting contest that's going on right now, right? Before we dive into more PowerShell.
Yeah. Last year and in previous years, Microsoft has sponsored the scripting games, and usually it's been in the winter. This year, we have a new scripting guy, and now it's been moved to summer.
And the scripting guy is a series of articles on TechNet, right?
Yes. Yeah, and on TechNet there's a series, a lot of walkthroughs. Actually, they just had a guest scripting guy in talking a lot about PowerShell and SQL Server. So that Buck Woody. Over TechEd, we finally sealed the deal, and this year the scripting games are going to be co-sponsored by PowerShellCommunity.org, of which I'm involved with, and PoshCode.org, which is a PowerShell community script repository. And so we're going to be partnering with Microsoft this year to bring the scripting games to people.
Is there some kind of prize involved? Is it a standard kind of coding contest kind of thing? Or
Normally there's been like a leaderboard and scripts were scored. Everything was sent in to the scripting guys, and then they would evaluate them and score the scripts. This year they're taking a little different tact. Ed Wilson, who's the scripting guy, he wants to do this more as a learning thing. There's not going to be scores, but there are going to be some giveaways and prizes and stuff, random, I believe. The benefit of this one is there's two tracks. There's a beginner and advanced. There's VB script and there's PowerShell. Each problem you can solve in either language. PoshCode is going to have a special repository, so you're going to be able to see all the other scripts that have been submitted. You'll be able to take those, and if you don't want to write your own, you can just tweak that one a little bit. And in addition, there's going to be community commentators posting solutions in VBScript and PowerShell. There might be a separate VB script commentator in PowerShell. I'm actually doing VB script and a PowerShell solution for the games this year. So you're able to see their solutions, and then they also have to do a little write-up as to how they came about that and why that's an effective solution for them.
So this is a lot like, there's a few sites that do this, and I'll mention just a couple of these. A site that runs a coding contest called Top Coder, okay. And then there's Project Euler, which is, we've actually done a Thirsty Developer podcast. It was actually the first one we recorded like nearly 2 years ago, and that's one where they give you a mathematical problem and the implementation is not part of the actual contest itself. You can do it in whatever language you want. So they're not grading your code. They're grading the solution.
Okay.
But that's easy because the solution is always a mathematical answer.
There's actually a guy in the PowerShell community who's been going through and solving the, you know, the project Euler, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a whole series on his blog as to the various solutions for in PowerShell for the various questions.
The contest is a very neat way to kind of polish your skills, mm-hmm. you know, in the language. And it was a question that I'd actually posed to the guys that were talking about Project Euler. It's a great way to learn a new language because you have to practice the constructs.
Oh, definitely. And that's one of the things I like about the scripting games is it gives you a chance to experiment and work in the language without doing anything destructive in your environment. You know, you get exposed to some of the different language constructs and some of the different ways to use it without necessarily, you know, deleting users out of your Active Directory.
Right. One more thing is we ran into each other at Tech Ed a couple weeks ago.
That we did.
So was that your first Tech Ed, or had you been
to
Tech
Ed
before?
That was my very first Tech Ed.
And what did you think of Tech Ed?
Because it was my first Tech Ed, everyone was saying that, oh, attendance is down. I thought there was a good amount of people. I had a great time. It went very, very fast. I had the opportunity to work at the PowerShell booth, or the PowerShell kiosk, the management technologies, and got to meet a lot of the product team, and everyone was just wonderful. I had a really good time.
Yeah, it is a fabulous event, and there was some people being critical about the number of people that were there, and I think they said that there was about 7,000 people there, which is a lot of people. But it was nothing like in a couple of years ago, there was like 14,000 people. So I think there were some people who'd gone to every Tech Ed that said this one was a little down from an attendance standpoint, but it was nice because you didn't have that crush of humanity going from session to session, you know.
Well, and the other thing is you got a lot of FaceTime with people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I wish I would have had a chance to get more interviews. I lined up a few and I ran out of time. You know, you were able to actually go up and talk and spend a bit of time talking to people. I got a lot of time to talk to people about PowerShell, walk them through, because we only had one computer at the kiosk, and we had enough time that we were able to run through some demos and things with people, and yeah, it was a good time.
Yep, and I really enjoyed Tech Ed this year. Although I will admit to, since I went to PDC and then Tech Ed, I'm a little tired of the Los Angeles County Convention Center. So PDC 2009 will also be there, and I don't know if I'm going to go back or not. So,
well, hopefully I'll get a chance to get out to PDC this year. I've never been to that either, so I'd like to get.
PDC's got a different vibe. It's a really cool conference, and we'll put registration information or show information about PDC in the show notes, and of course we'll talk about the scripting games and all that. But let's talk a little PowerShell, right?
That's all what right, we're really that's what here, we came for. Here for.
Enough,
so.
Enough of this banter stuff, right?
Exactly.
So what I said is like, hey, I've got a request for more PowerShell, right? And I do think that we just barely scratched the surface. You sent me a list of things to talk about, and one of them was commandlets. And
yes.
I said, this is definitely one that I want to understand a little better.
Okay.
So, brief description, what's a commandlet?
Commandlet is the basic unit of work in PowerShell. It is a .NET class. It starts with a verb, ends with a noun, and the noun's singular. It's just the naming convention. And actually, in some of the new versions, they're actually starting to enforce some of the naming convention.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that when we talk a little bit about what's coming up. Commandlets, like I mentioned, they're .NET class, so they're extremely easy to implement. But by being basic unit of work, it's what acts on the objects in your PowerShell session. And you can chain them together, and that's actually where the power really comes in, is you're able to pass objects from commandlet to commandlet, or from functions to commandlets, and functions being stuff you write in PowerShell code.
Now, PowerShell ships with a whole bunch of commandlets, right? I mean, that's the basic unit of work. So
yes.
PowerShell itself has
Version 1's got 129 commandlets.
I knew you would know the number.
Well, the reason
I knew it was over 100, but
the reason I looked it up is because version 2, and the reason I've really been encouraging people to get on the PowerShell bandwagon now. Version 2, when I booted up Windows 7 and looked at just the basic commandlets that only just apply to the OS and the basic install PowerShell, it's 235.
Okay, so an additional 100.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and that's just the basic PowerShell install.
Right, and that's the next thing I wanted to get to is that there are also commandlets with additional products that ship. Right?
Yes.
For instance, I think Exchange probably has like 30 additional
120 additional, 140, something
okay.
like that. Yeah, it's up there. One of the great things about commandlets is like I said, it's a basic unit work, but it's task-based. So these things are really broken down. If you're familiar with some of the design guidelines that you hear, you know, like SOLID and
single responsibility.
Right.
Yeah.
You want to break it down so that commandlet is only doing one thing, because that then allows you to build composable functionality through PowerShell. So if I give you something that's like a do everything commandlet, well, that doesn't give you much flexibility. Even if I give you 7,000 parameters to it, STS admin anybody? if you're a SharePoint person, that lets you do everything with SharePoint, but you have to know all these different switches and input options. Same thing with like NetShell for the command line admin. You know, you can do everything through NetShell for networking, but you have to know all the different inputs to it. Well, PowerShell lets you break that down.
And a quick example of this is like there's a group of commandlets for working with files and directories.
Yes.
Right? But, you know, get files, you know, so getting a list of files is one commandlet.
Yeah.
It's not like there's a command, you know, like dir or ls, and you pass a whole bunch of switches to it, right?
Well, it's funny you say it. There is no get file, but there's get child item. And the reason
that's right, yeah.
And the reason it's named that way is the file system is a provider in the PowerShell context. A provider basically being a flatter hierarchical structure that exposes information. So you have your file system. The registry is also a provider. Your session variables are a provider. So you can actually change directory into your functions or your variables or your aliases. So a lot of your certificate store. So there's a lot of additional things that are exposed as providers, which get child item allows you to get a listings of. So when I say get child item, that's like saying DIR. Well, to make things simpler on you, PowerShell went ahead and includes aliases for commands. So get child item is aliased to DIR.
Right.
Or for the more Linux inclined, LS.
And aliases are something that is just a shortcut for the longer name, right?
Correct. Yeah. And so if you do type DIR, your normal command.exe DIR short command line switches won't work. You are using get child items, so you do have a different set of command line, a different set of parameters.
And to make sure people understand this, that when you're typing in DIR, it's not at the command prompt, it's at the PowerShell prompt.
Correct.
Right.
They look very similar initially. PowerShell version 2 changes that somewhat. In the version 1 of PowerShell, the initial instance of it is hosted in command.exe.
Okay. Here's a question I have for you, and this is, you know, because as somebody who's kind of only on the periphery of what PowerShell can do, can I write my own commandlets?
Oh, you bet. That's
a very loaded question. You like that softball?
Yeah, you know? I did. I could see that one coming.
He's going for the spike, folks.
Yeah. No, yes.
I kind of knew the answer to that one, but you know, makes for better radio.
If you can write C# or VB, yeah, you can write your own commandlets. I would assume that you'd be able to do it in F# as well. Now that's becoming a first class citizen, but as far as writing your own commandlets, version 2 even lets you write your own commandlets in PowerShell.
Okay.
So
let's talk about just doing it in NVB or C#.
Okay. Easiest way is to, and I'll give you a link for this for the show notes, is to run out to Channel 9 and grab the templates for creating a PowerShell commandlet.
And this is a set of templates that add additional project items into Visual Studio.
Yes, it gives you a solution type of, there's a PowerShell solution, and then you have project types for commandlets or PS commandlets. Now, the difference there is just its inheritance.
Okay.
You're creating a class, you're going to inherit either from the commandlet or from the PS commandlet class, and those are in the system.management.automation namespace. And that's all found in the DLLs that the PowerShell install provides.
Get the templates, so it's a little easier on me, so yep. it kind of lays out the basics. There's inheritance going on, right?
Yep.
I guess there's two basic ways to do this in programming, right? You can add marker information using attributes and say that this is the type of class it is. But I think inheritance is easy because then PowerShell can just use reflection to say, give me all objects in this assembly that inherit from a type that I know, right?
Yes.
Okay, and then it's got the interface that's defined at the inherited class level, so it knows how to call things, right?
And actually the PowerShell runtime uses inheritance and attributes in building the grammar.
Okay.
And so, and that's kind of where we're going here. The templates are also nice because they also add the references for you that you need. So that's all taken care of in the template. You can do it manually, and there's stuff on MSDN that tells you how to get exactly what you need to get started up. But once you create your commandlet, all you really need to do is override one method called process record.
Okay.
And you have a functioning commandlet. Now, it's not going to do much because you're not handling any input or anything there, but essentially, the process record is what does the work on each object that comes into your commandlet. Now, let's talk about getting some data into your commandlet.
Okay. Is that a function or a subroutine, by the way? I think it's a function, right?
Function.
Because, it returns, yeah.
Yeah, it's a method. Functions, my sysadmin nature is going to come through here. I might miss a term or so.
That's okay.
I can get around Visual Studio enough to write some commandlets, and if I can do them, anybody can write these commandlets. So you have your class, you give it your name. At the top of your class, you're going to stick an attribute on there saying that's a commandlet.
Okay.
And that the actually you're going to declare what the verb is, and there's enumerations provided in the system.management.automation namespace that give you all the common verbs, verbs for data transfer, verbs for working with communications. There's about five different enumerations of verbs that you can call from, and there's documentation on MSDN as to what alternative words are for those. So, like, if you were going to come up with, I'm drawing a blank on it.
Let's just create a fictional system here, right? Like, get identities. Would that be a valid one?
Well, it'd be get identity.
We
want to go singular.
Singular, yeah.
Now, there is no, because the noun could be anything, there is no enumerations. There are no enumerations for the nouns.
Right.
So you'd attribute it with a verb from the enumeration, and then a comma, and you specify what your noun is. And again, you want to do singular because you're going to do one or more. But usually, you're going to get one object back from each operation that the commandlet handles.
Right.
So just to keep everything consistent, we'll stick with the singular nouns. If you have a noun that's a very common thing like user, you might want to prefix that. For example, if you, Quest team, they did Active Directory commandlets. And one of the things that they did is they prefixed all their commands with a Q. So you always knew that the AD user, the get AD user command, well, the Quest version was a get QAD user.
Okay.
And that
would disambiguate it from some other user that you could also be referencing.
Right. And that was kind of to come up around a limitation that version 1 has, is in version 1 of PowerShell, there's no real notion of, like, namespaces. So if you have you know, 15 get user commandlets all from different snap-ins. Snap-ins are the other DLLs and things that you'd add in to provide additional commandlets. You're going to have some issues. You're only going to be able to access one of them with by the shortened name, and then you'd have to use the full snap-in name as and then the commandlet name to qualify the others. So in order to...
And the one that you would get, is that determined by the order of the snap-in?
Yeah. And that changed...
Well, first it would go to the native PowerShell ones, and then it would go to the order of snap-in, right?
I believe it's the last one added.
Last.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that. There's actually been some discussion about on how that is resolved, because it does change a little in version 2.
Okay.
I just glanced over that conversation, so I'm reaching there with that.
That's fine.
But you would only see one of those get users, and you'd have to fully qualify the remaining ones. And get user, I mean, that's a pretty common... that's a pretty common paradigm that you're going to see.
Yeah, user could be in a lot of different systems, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing that you have to be, when you're developing your own commandlet, you have to be mindful of is the fact that you may only see one get identity in my fictional system that I created on the fly here.
Yep.
Right? But you don't know what else that person who's using your commandlet has also referenced.
Oh, that's a very good point, because... I came across this when I was talking to some developers about why they'd want to support PowerShell in their application. Like, well, I could just give them all the same functionality in a web page. You know, I can give them an admin portal and give them all that functionality there. Well, the beauty of PowerShell is it lets me tie in that management to any other data source and thing that I have. And you lock me down and you give me just the web, even the nicest web front end or the nicest, you know, GUI-based admin portal that you give me, I'm not going to have the flexibility that I have in PowerShell. I can go out and I can query my Active Directory. I can hit a database. I can read flat files. I can import CSV files. I have all these other data sources, or I can take the output of other, you know, other products that have PowerShell interfaces and use as my input into this product.
Yeah. For instance, you may want to query your Active Directory, and you may want to query my fictional system for identities.
Yep.
And you may say, show me anybody who's in Active Directory that's not in this system.
Yep, exactly.
And if they gave you a web page, you would have to do that with your eyeballs, right? Or you'd have to copy and paste into something and run a diff or something like that, right?
Exactly.
It's not as elegant as the scripting interface.
Right. And if I can script it, I can repeat it easily. You know, it's not where I have to schedule an export of this data and then, you know, have a whole SSIS, a SQL Server Integration Services job that grabs it all, does all this stuff, and gets it all back. I can do it in a couple of lines of PowerShell and schedule it to run it whatever I want or run it whenever I need to. So you do want to make sure that you disambiguate your commands, you know, getting that up, coming all the way back around to disambiguating your nouns. Then you have some other options that you can do to give your commandlet more functionality. If it's going to be a destructive commandlet, PowerShell allows you to annotate that in that same attribute and say that it supports supports should process. And what that gives you is it builds in support for you to get the dash what if and the dash confirm parameters.
Okay.
And what that allows you to do is it gives you a framework to say, you just wrap some of your code in an if statement and say if should process, and then you have the ability to give a person a text output of if you did this command, this and this and this and this would all be affected. So you could kind of see ahead of time before you ran something destructive and see what's actually going to be affected. Dash confirm gives you the ability to say yes or no to each change.
Okay.
And being able to support that is it's as simple as saying should process equal true, set should process equal true.
These are additional things that you as the developer, you know, niceties that you can add if it's in the case of the destructive thing would be important, because if somebody fat fingers the difference between R asterisk and asterisk could be huge.
Exactly.
Right. So, so for instance, like, you know, if you're talking about the get child thing against the directory provider,
mm-hmm.
you know, asterisk could delete everything. R asterisk only delete, you know, it's still kind of destructive, right? Everything that starts with an R, and that may not be their intended consequences, but it's a little different. And that would allow them a prompt to say, hey, are you sure you really want to delete 12,000 entries? Or, you know, in the case of R asterisk, 2,000, right?
Yeah. And the confirm, actually, they'd get a confirm on each one of those. The dash what if would actually just run through and give them output saying, this item's going to be deleted, this item's going to be deleted, that item's going to be deleted. And I find dash what if a lot more useful than dash confirm, because if I'm doing something on a large number of operations, I'm going to end up putting yes to all.
Right.
So dash what if can be a real lifesaver. And adding support for it is very, very simple. Now let's get on to getting some data into our commandlet. Do you know how to declare properties?
Yeah.
Making a public property on your class, those are your parameters.
So that's equivalent to declaring a parameter.
Yep. PowerShell handles all the parsing for you.
Okay, so I don't have to do any, like, you know, attribute it up or anything like that?
You do stick an attribute on it.
Okay.
But you don't have to parse args.
Oh, okay.
So you stick a parameter on there saying that it's, stick an attribute on there saying it's a parameter. You can declare a position for it. You can put it into a parameter set. So you can say, okay, I'm going to have one set of parameters that if I get a file object in, I also want to give them the opportunity to use this and this parameter. If I'm getting a path in, I only want this, this, and this parameter. You know.
So
you can set up parameter sets based on the type of input. And then PowerShell works it all out. So you can also then specify in that attribute if you want to take those parameters from the pipeline. So say your command is the second one in. So say
haven't talked about that in this show yet.
But no,
we will.
Yeah. So if your commandlet's the second one in, and you want to, in the pipeline, meaning you're going to be taking in the output from another commandlet. Like, for example, in your get identities, the next commandlet down might be set identity, and you're going to change something on there. So set identity should have an identity property that takes an identity object, that's the output from get identity, and you'll have an option in your attribute to say, hey, value from pipeline, true.
Okay.
Now, say for example, your identity has a string that's an identifier for it, and it's just the identity name. And you have a CSV file with the identity name and a bunch of other information. You can use import CSV, which will bring in and create a bunch of custom objects, so just objects from scratch, with the properties being the titles of each of those rows.
Okay.
You can also have a parameter in your get identity or set identity that it's the identifier name and value from pipeline. You could say by property name equals true. And so it'll actually then look at those objects that come in and say, okay, I don't have any identity objects coming in. I do have this custom object. Let's see if it's got any properties that match up to the properties I'm looking for in my parameter set. And it'll then read through and match those up.
Do you know that when I've done command line applications, like back in the, as Dave Boss says, back in the day,
yeah,
you know, the percentage of my code that was dealing with the things that you just talked about, it's huge, right?
Yep.
You know, all the parsing and the validation of the command line, you know, and even then, like, it would be really easy to break, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like PowerShell, what they've done is they've said, hey, what's hard about what we do from scripting? And one of the things is command lines, and let's just, you know, clean it up with, you know, some nice constructs, a little bit of convention, right?
Yes.
By default, if I declare three properties, do I have to say what order they are in the command line, or is there a default?
By default, they're going to if you want to do them in a default order, you will have to attribute the order that they're in. It'll take whatever order that those properties are in, and you can fill them in without having to do property names. How the parameter binding works, that could be a whole show. So
okay.
I'm not going to go too deep into it here. But basically, if you specify a parameter name, those get bound first, and then it goes positionally.
Okay.
And you can have stuff that's not that doesn't have a position. If it doesn't have a position, it doesn't get bound unless it's got the name.
Okay.
So it'll ignore stuff that it doesn't have either positional or named.
Rather than assume something that could be bad.
Right.
Okay.
And it's very easy to set up the positionality of your commandlets because it's just a matter of position equals 0, 1, 2, 3, you know, and so forth. So from that standpoint, it's really easy. But one of the things that the PowerShell team did is, yeah, like you were saying about, you know, the hard part is parsing out all these arguments and that kind of thing. And they built the framework to do that. And the framework is there for you to use as an application developer and be able to turn around and expose the management functionality in an easier format.
Right. Now, you mentioned pipelines a minute ago, and one of the things, this goes to the design of your commandlet when you're writing your own.
Yes.
Is A, you ought to not assume that you have to write a lot of this stuff, because there's probably commandlets, you know, in the, you know, the PowerShell shipping 140/239, depending on which version you've got, that'll do a lot of this stuff for you, like, you know, sorting, for instance.
Yep.
Or filtering, right?
Filtering your commandlet output, unless you're writing a specific commandlet to do a specific kind of output. I actually just did a blog post on this today, actually. And if your commandlets and your functions and things, you should always output objects.
Okay.
And, you know, the type of object that you should put out, well, that's kind of up to you, because PowerShell's .NET, and if it's .NET object, we can work with it. What's traditionally easiest for us to work with in the pipeline is property bags. Give us a lot of properties. The methods are useful, but it's more intuitive in PowerShell to use commandlets to do the actions than to call methods on things. You can, and I actually use PowerShell as my exploratory laboratory when I'm actually playing around in Visual Studio and I want to see how something works. So you can call methods all day on stuff and you know, bring it and create objects and do all that fun stuff. But when you're actually designing commandlets and when you're designing the output objects for them, keep in mind stuff like the view model pattern, you know, where you're stripping out a lot of the functionality. It's just a lot of the data that's there, and you want to stick with that because that's what's going to be useful for the admin.
Well, and the key thing here is that your commandlet probably will take something else as an input.
Yes.
Very well likely could be used, its output could be used as an input to another commandlet.
Yes.
And that's how you should mentally be designing this. Now, the scary thing and the thing that you know, the typical developer, if they're looking at one of these, I know this, and I speak from my experience, right, is we usually, when we're writing code, we want to know what the input and the output is. PowerShell, you got to suspend that belief that you're ever going to know, right? You've got to design it. So going back to your comment about it really fits the solid principle, you know, you just got to worry about the thing that you're doing. Take your input, take your output, and the person who's at the command line is going to be able to do some really creative things that you never envisioned.
Exactly. It's a lot like other dynamic languages like Python and that kind of. You really don't necessarily know what's going to be coming into a function. As long as it has certain properties or certain methods, who really cares?
Right.
You know, from the standpoint of the PowerShell developer, as long as the object coming into your pipeline, either through a parameter or into your commandlet, either through the pipeline or from a parameter, as long as it has the properties or is an object of the type you want, or, you know, it has something that you can uniquely pull out of it to do the functionality that you need to do for your application, it shouldn't really matter where it's coming from. Now, again, .NET framework, you can have strongly typed arguments. You can have parameter transform. You can set transforms. So if you get an object that's not quite what you need, you can set up method. You can write code that's going to convert it to the object you do need.
Okay.
Now, of course, there's always a performance penalty for that kind of thing, but it's there, and you write those, and you can write it once and have it available in all your commandlets, and just, you know, as simple as an attribute.
One of the other mind-blowing things is that while an object coming into your, and correct me if I'm wrong here, while an object coming in your commandlet can have more than one thing on it, right? You can have when you say get identity,
yep.
it could actually have several identities coming out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to act on each one of those as not, and you don't have to write code from a for loop standpoint. It's going to act on each one of them individually.
Correct. Unless you're designing your input to take arrays, the process record happens for each object that comes through.
Right.
The process method that happens for each and every object that comes through. There are methods that you can override before begin processing and end processing, that you can do some setup and teardown stuff if you need to.
Right.
There's a stop processing in case the command terminates abnormally. That's one thing we never even got to touch is error handling. There's a whole
error
bunch
handling's
of
another show, right?
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of error handling stuff built in for you to use.
But when you're the key thing here is that when you're designing it, you've got to change your thought process just a little bit from the code that you're normally writing inside of an application.
Right. Yeah, so your code's going to operate on one item at a time as it comes in through the pipeline. You might be operating on, 5,000 objects, but you're going to address them one at a time.
There might be some things that you want to do from a transaction standpoint. You're thinking about whether they should succeed or fail as a unit or as individuals. There's some things to think about from the design, right?
It's funny you mentioned transactions, because in version 2, there's support in PowerShell built in for transactions. You have to write the code to do it, but there's hooks in there for doing things as a transaction and for working with transactions. Right now, I think only the registry provider has transaction support in version 2, but the plumbing is all there.
Okay.
So if you want to add support for transactions into your application, there's plumbing in version 2 in PowerShell for that.
Any other burning things on commandlets? Because I do want to talk about hosting for a minute. You could go on, I know.
Let's talk a little bit about hosting. I don't want to run out of time. Well, I'm sure we will, but...
We're doing okay, though.
Okay.
So from a hosting standpoint, now this is a little... You got to wrap your head around this, right? This is your application hosting PowerShell.
Yes.
Okay, so this is... The commandlets is, hey, I'm going to have a little bit of my application's functionality exposed to PowerShell so I can do some administration things. Yep. So guys like Steve can do some interesting things with it, right?
Right.
So this is, actually having PowerShell as part of my application.
Correct.
Give me a real-world concrete example of why you would do this, or maybe something shipping that's doing this.
Oh, there's a few things out there. PowerGUI is a free thing from Quest Software. They actually host the PowerShell runtime and expose it like an MMC, and everything running behind its PowerShell. It's a real cool learning tool, and a lot of people are using this in their day-to-day operations. They build functionality in PowerShell, but then they expose it in PowerGUI. They can lock it down and give it to their frontline support staff, and they can kind of customize the functionality as they need to for their environment and as things change in their environment. Me personally, I use PowerGUI pretty regularly, but also I use Polymon, which is a network monitoring solution. And I think we talked about this a little bit last time, but they host the PowerShell runtime, and the PowerScripting podcast guys talked to the developer of Polymon. He's actually out in Madison.
I should get him on the show.
Yeah. I'll get you his contact info.
Please do.
He was floored when he found out how easy it was to integrate PowerShell scripting. That was one of the first requests he had for the application, Polymon Network and Systems Monitoring application. What it allowed him to do in like 10 lines of code is host the PowerShell runtime and run any script that you wanted to do as a monitor.
Okay.
So basically anything that I can touch in PowerShell, I can monitor, I can include in my monitoring application without having to go and write a monitor for it. Because you could, it does have a plug-in system where you can go out, you can write a monitor, you inherit from a certain class, you throw it in a directory, and it finds it.
Okay.
But then I have to build the code, I have to do all this stuff, where with PowerShell I can write a script and kind of debug it or change it on the fly and get out what I want. The benefit that he gets is he exposes a status object and a counters object, and as the script author, it's my job to populate those so that when the script is done running, the application then looks at those variables or those objects, and it can determine you know, how to gauge the success of the operation.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, he added additional support for PowerShell in an after-action an after-action script. So after a monitor runs, you can then use PowerShell to take a look at the success or failure of the operation and then determine to do something or not. So you right there, without him having to add much more than, you know, 10 or 20 lines of code, he basically put in a plug-in system that anybody can do to make that system from just monitoring to reactive.
Okay. So this is an extensibility pivot without having to write your own framework, is that you could say, my extensibility is PowerShell.
Yep. End Software has some community-licensed plugins for SharePoint, so you can write PowerShell code. And for ASP.NET, there's a where you can do a panel, like an update panel, except back-ended by PowerShell code.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Steve's chuckling because he looks on my face because it's kind of mind-blowing. So,
but yeah, I mean, there's some interesting things out there for hosting PowerShell. The End Software stuff came out just before TechEd, so that's pretty new out there.
What are some of the issues with hosting? Because I'm sure there's some session information that you have to pass back and forth between actual code that you're hosting has to be aware of things that might be going on in your application. Is that true or no? Or
a little bit. You basically create a run space. So after you've made the necessary references, you new up a run space or use a run space factory method, and then you create a pipeline. And in that pipeline, that's where you add your commands and everything else. And once that's all, and you can also add in into this run space, you can add in objects from your application. And that's, like, for example, in Polymon, that's where you get the counters and the status. There's just a method call where you can reference those. You reference a variable pointing at one of your objects and pulls it into the run space. And same thing, you're able, after a pipeline completes, you're able to read that information back out. All the plumbing's done for you. It's just a matter of linking everything up.
Cool.
To actually get PowerShell to execute in your session, you know, you create a run space, you know, throw it in a using so you make sure you get disposed at the end.
Yeah.
Create a pipeline, add your commands, set it off, fire it.
And it's going to run into the context. The PowerShell will run in the context of whatever the current user is, unless you do something with the thread identity, right?
Correct.
So you've got some built-in protection there. I'm trying to think of every time I hear of scripting as part of an application, the first thing I think of is, okay, what's the attack vector here? Right.
Now you can constrain your run space. You can restrict it, and you can limit what commands the person can run. You can, for example, in Polymon, they're basically just taking a little text box and taking all the commands that the script you wrote in there and running that. You could also limit it out and, you know, process that text however you want or constrain the run space.
So you could make it so that the run space only had native PowerShell commandlets available to it so that somebody couldn't insert their own commandlet, for instance?
Correct. Okay. Or you can preload it with other commandlets that you want them to have, say one specific for your application, and make those available. But say you don't want them working with WMI, you just don't allow them to use the WMI related commandlets.
Oh, so you could actually exclude those.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, you can lock it down as you need to.
Okay. And I think the real fundamental thing is making sure that the identity is limited as well. You know, because that's always going to reduce your attack vector unless that person's running as super user, right?
Right. Now, a lot of the commandlets in PowerShell do allow you to provide alternate credentials. So if the person's got access to these other credentials and there's a method for retrieving those or passing those along, that's always a potential threat there as well. But, you know, you're going to have that anytime you open your application to run any external code.
How does PowerShell in general, and I've got this question because we're talking about the hosting,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I think it applies to PowerShell in general, that how does it handle elevation that if I'm running as an admin in Vista or Windows 7,
yep.
and I go to modify the registry, which is something that I need to elevate to?
You have to run an elevated PowerShell session.
I have to start PowerShell, you know, elevated. Yep. It's not going to actually prompt me and then
No.
Okay. That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, and that is something, you know, it occasionally has been a hassle. I'm normally running on Windows 7 now, and so I occasionally run into instances where I need to have an elevated command prompt, and yeah, you run it as an admin, and there you go.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in, you know, I have UAC turned on. Matter of fact, I would like myself better if I actually was running as a limited account.
Mm-hmm.
right now, I'm running as an admin account, but I've got UAC on, so I've got limited privileges.
Right,
it's easy to prompt myself up, but I fundamentally feel that that's the best way to go. I can deal with a little noise every once in a while, you know, with the elevation, but it does get wonky when you've got something like PowerShell that requires you to elevate prior to running.
Yes,
I run into this with Windows Azure, the CTP with the SDK.
Yep.
When I go to run it in Visual Studio, I always forget to launch Visual Studio as admin.
I've been playing around with Azure myself, and yeah, I run into the same issue. I'm like, oh, I forgot to start. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I show a lot of demos in my job. Every demo starts off with oops. But it's a good talking point, because then you can tell people how, hey, you're not supposed to be running as an admin, and this is the one time that Larry's going to allow you to run as admin. is to actually start, you know, an Azure Visual Studio session where you're going to do debugging. So
Now you can't. There are, you know, some power toys and things out there where for the command prompt and for PowerShell, you know, there's a command that, you know, for elevate and lets you kick off another process. Well, you can do that kind of thing from your current PowerShell session. You know, kick off an elevated process and then run it, but you'll still get the prompt.
Right.
You know, so it's not going to be something that happens in an automated fashion.
Yeah, I don't think that's a showstopper or horrific thing. If you're going to be running these things, you know, as a scheduled job, you're going to have to understand that you're going to have to elevate before you run the PowerShell. Right.
Right.
PowerScript. Is a script PowerShell script. That's the right way of saying it.
Yep. You know, that's kind of a security feature. There's also a lot of other security features in PowerShell by default. They did not want the next Melissa or I Love You virus to be a PowerShell script.
Right. And I was going to ask about CASPOL, but it's probably too detailed, you know, which is the code access security.
Yeah. I'm not 100% up on that. I have run into some issues in a hosted situation with PowerShell loading other DLLs, and
particularly if you run them off a network share, that's where it really kind of kicks in, because by default .NET has that a medium trust, I think, is the level,
and that's where I ran into an issue. I was actually trying to load up some libraries to work with SSH, and I had it out on a network share, and that wasn't the right way to do it.
Right. Copy them local, right?
Yeah.
So, do you want to wrap up just talking about some new features in PowerShell 2? And I know that you've talked a lot about them as we've been going through.
Yeah, I've been mentioning a few as we go, but version 2 is on the horizon. It's on by default in Windows 7 and Server 2008 R2, which is just awesome. When you install Server 2008 R2, one of the two items that's in the little taskbar there, one of them's PowerShell, and it's available on Server Core now.
Okay.
In 2008 R2.
And that's because it wasn't in core in Windows Server 2008 because of the dependency of the .NET framework on the GUI libraries, but that's kind of been resolved.
Yes.
In R2.
Yep. Yeah. So that's been resolved. After the release of Windows 7, and that's going to be the final release, that's going to be when PowerShell version 2 kind of goes gold. After that, within, I think, 3 or 4 months, they've said they'll have down-level versions of version 2 available for Server 2000, or for, 2008, Server 2003, Vista, XP.
Okay.
Now, some of the features that are in version 2 that you'll see in Windows 7 will not be available in the down-level clients, because the OS doesn't support them.
Okay.
There's some stuff for working with diagnostics and logging in Windows 7. You're not going to see that. The remoting, that's the big one that everyone's been waiting for. Remoting and background jobs are two huge items that you'll see in version 2. that we didn't have in version 1. So there's a lot of trickery that people were doing to get stuff working.
Okay.
But you'll have a graphical script editor in version 2, a WPF-based editor. I think it's the editor that initially they kind of took some of that from the Visual Studio team. But it's PowerShell hosted, and it's got a script editor. You can have multiple run spaces, connect to remote run spaces from it, do some configuration, and you can extend it in PowerShell. It exposes the host. It exposes that host as an object. They give it a variable name, and you can go in and mess around with it, change the font sizes, add menu items, all sorts of fun and cool stuff there.
So prior to this, you know, new graphical interface, what were you using to write your PowerShell scripts? Was it just Visual Studio?
No. Notepad? So actually, some in Notepad.
Emacs?
Notepad Plus. There are actually some great third-party PowerShell script editors.
Didn't we talk about ISE or something like that?
PowerShell ISE is the version 2. That's the script editor.
So that's the name
2.
Of it. Okay.
Yeah, that's the graphical PowerShell, and now it's the PowerShell ISE. PowerGUI has a script editor it comes with. That's free. It's really nice and convenient and gives you some tab completion and IntelliSense-like stuff. PowerShell Plus by Idera, they have a enhanced PowerShell console, and then that includes a script editor as well. The enhanced console has some like variable watchers and a bunch of additional other features, some great help integration. Primal Script from Sapien, they've got great PowerShell support in there. I'm trying to think. Admin Script Editor is the other one.
So you had a lot of choices.
Yeah, you weren't hurting.
You weren't
for an
longing
editor.
For something. You weren't. You weren't in Notepad. So
no. And though sometimes Notepad was fast, and you know, for a quick edit, that it works. But yeah, the syntax highlighting and coloring and stuff is all really nice features to have. I was actually just listening to. I think it was Hurting Code podcast. They just released one about talking about Visual Studio, and they were talking about PowerShell. And yeah, Visual Studio 10 does not have any PowerShell integration, but they said maybe version 12, or maybe 2012 version.
Do you know if the projects, the project extensions are going to be part of Visual Studio 2010? The ones you got to go to Channel 9 right now to get.
I doubt it.
Okay.
Not that I've heard any of, and I have yet to download the beta. So, see, anything else version 2-wise? Well, there's a lot of other stuff. There's some new stuff in the API. They actually streamlined some of the hosting stuff. I've mainly focused my development stuff at version 1 because that's up until recently. That's been what was on the foreseeable future. Now version 2 is coming a bit closer. I'm going to have to start digging into the SDK for that. But there's some great samples included in the SDKs as far as all the as hosting, creating providers, creating commandlets. Some good stuff there. PowerShell community. I have to get this plug in. I didn't get it in last time.
It's okay.
PowerShellCommunity.org is a community website dedicated to PowerShell and helping people learn and use it. If you are interested in getting your hands into PowerShell, we have forums there. One of the forums one section of forums is dedicated to development with PowerShell, hosting it, building commandlets, and stuff dedicated towards developing for version 2. So, you know, if this is something that you're interested in and you're starting to play around with and you have questions, a lot of the MVPs frequent the forums there. I know I'm watching them daily. You know, it's a good place to learn and use, so...
That's a sign that it's going to stick around for a while, is when you have that vibrant community of people that'll help. So,
well, the awesome part about the PowerShell community is IT pros it's very difficult to drag them into community of any sort. You will see communities grow up around specific products, and the one thing about PowerShell is with Microsoft's just huge backing of PowerShell and their push at TechEd, there were 37 sessions that had PowerShell in the title. There were, you know, many, many more that covered some PowerShell content because it's getting woven into all sorts of the products. And down to, you know, the troubleshooting stuff in 7, you know, that's all tied in with PowerShell. Well, because PowerShell touches on all these different technologies and being a .NET technology, draws in developers, it's creating this heterogeneous community of people who normally don't talk and interact. The community has just ballooned. And Jeffrey Snover, he's a distinguished engineer who came up with PowerShell. And he was recently promoted to that. He was a partner architect not too long ago. And I think there's only like 36 distinguished engineers in the company. So congratulations, Jeffrey. He's always been a big believer in that the community would rally around PowerShell.
Right.
But I know a lot of the rest of the PowerShell team from my conversations have been very happy and surprised with the strength of support that the community provides. And we had such a warm the PowerShell community people, we had such a warm welcome at TechEd from the PowerShell team that we were interacting with there. We had a great community dinner, which
I crashed.
Yeah. Where I ran into you guys had a better room than we did, but
well, we had a bigger room and fewer people, so
yeah. I said next time we'll have to find out who did your booking. So
I'm not gonna tell.
The community around PowerShell is great. Half the about half the MVPs are developers, half are admin focused. So we draw a really good cross section and a lot of people working together who normally wouldn't.
Well, cool. Thanks for being on the show again, Steve.
Oh,
and I reserve the right to call on you for like a third show about PowerShell.
If you have the interest, I'm more than happy to fill your time.
All right. Thanks for being on the Thirsty Developer.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Thirsty Developer. For more information, visit thirstydeveloper.com. We'll see you next time.